Welcome to Asimov's Spotlight. Here now, another story selected from the pages of Asimov's science fiction magazine.
For this September-October installment of our podcast, we have Y.M. Pang's first story to appear in Asimov's pages. Y.M. Pang spent her childhood pacing around her grandfather's bedroom, telling him stories of magic, swords, and bears. Enjoy now as she tells you the unnerving story of a trick-performing cat and its eponymous rival, a mangy white dog.
The mangy white dog wandered through the intersection of Saming and Tinglu. I saw him 3 times a week, on first day, third day, and Sunday, the days when Taihe and I performed there. Taihe laid down the mat. I'd hop off his shoulders and do a few leaps as warm-ups. When he threw me the embroidered ball, I'd flick it with my tail, then balance it on my head. Sometimes, Taihe held hoops for me to jump through, or threw rings for me to catch. Those who frequented the intersection knew me and called me Magic Cat. From the corner of my eye, I'd glimpse the mangy white dog shuffling down the opposite side of the street, a sodden newspaper in his mouth. A patch of fur had been chewed off from the side of his face, and he dragged his left hind limb as he walked. Coins clinked in Taihe's collection cup as I batted, tossed, flipped my way through my collection of tricks. An old woman stopped before the mat. Everything about her clothing was dirt-colored and dull, except her bright yellow scarf. The tiny slip at the corner said 100% silk, though I guess it was fake. Nylon, probably. She stared at me for several long minutes, then glanced at Taihe and asked, "How'd you train it?" Taihe laughed. "With difficulty," he said. I sniffed. Taihe training me? Preposterous. We'd made a deal. I would earn money with my tricks, and Taihe would cook for me, shelter me, and buy me the human things I wanted. Because people like that old woman would shoo me out of their shops rather than passing me a fish, even if I showed up with 10 yuan bills in my mouth. As the old woman turned away, the mangy white dog slinked across her path. He raised his pleading gaze to her, but she barely looked down as she skirted around him. As if she'd give him anything. She didn't even give me anything. And I was twice the animal he was. The dog's ears flattened against his head. He wandered towards the Balzer restaurant, probably to nose through the garbage bins. Sometimes I spotted him brushing past the legs of roadside meal vendors, feeding on bits of fried dough and licking at discarded eggshells. Then the vendors would notice and whack him on the head. When the day's work was done, Taihe bent down and climbed onto his shoulders. He'd walk off with the mat folded under his arm and the day's earnings tucked into his belted bag. For years, the mangy dog was simply there. Like the Balzer restaurant, the phlegm-covered pavement, the old lady in her stupid scarf, a white shadow wandering through the intersection long after Taihe and I had packed up. Except one day, the old lady stopped coming, and maybe that shifted the bones of the universe. But that was when the mangy white dog became more than another piece of the cityscape. 7 o'clock arrived that evening. Taihe packed up, barely able to conceal his grin. We'd made good money. I hoped he would buy me ribbon fish. I debuted a new trick. I would flick the ball into the air, perform a roll, then catch the ball on my head on its way down. It required me to flick the ball high, but with perfect control. "All right, freestyler," Taihe said. "Ready to go?" I meowed agreement. Taihe always joked about entering me into a freestyling competition. I fancy my chances against the China national football team, though that said more about them than it did about me. I leapt onto Taihe's shoulders and we started the familiar journey down Tinglu. But after a few steps, Taihe stopped. The mangy old dog stood before us. His fur had acquired new missing patches, and his left hind leg could no longer extend to the ground. He stared at us with those pleading, moon-gray eyes. Taiho's mouth tightened. "You're in the way," I told the dog. His eyes remained fixed on Taiho. Taiho stomped forward, wearing an intimidating scowl. The dog backed off, but remained in the middle of the walkway. Taiho made to walk around the dog, but the dog mirrored his every step. "Just run past him," I said. "I want to go home. I want ribbon fish." But as usual, Taiho did not understand me. He turned back to the dog. "Go away," he said. The mangy dog barked. His teeth were as yellow as that old woman's scarf. Taiho made a shooing motion with his hand. "Go away." By now, passing pedestrians and a vendor were staring at us. Taiho finally managed to maneuver around the dog and dash away. I glanced back. The dog didn't chase us, just whimpered and hung his head. "That was weird," I said. "He's never acted like that before." Taiho stroked my head. "Hey, old Chen should still be open. You want ribbon fish? Simrit sound good to you?" I yowled agreement. Taiho might not understand my words, but he could read agreement in my tone. Instead of entering the hutong that served as a shortcut to our apartment, Taiho headed for Bailo Market. We performed there every fourth day, so several of the vendors recognized us and shouted greetings. There was the man selling half-ripe watermelons, the woman with her hand-cut pendants, and, most annoyingly, Li Wen. He sold doomed chicks to kids, chattering parrots to adolescents, and the occasional mundane cat in a cramped cage. His wares were always so darn noisy, and I'd always hated those animals for their abject stupidity, their inability to speak or listen. At last, we reached O Chen's stall. The sea scent of his fish made my mouth water. Purring, I nuzzled against Taiho's neck. His skin was warm in the spring evening, and I felt his pulse against my cheek. I'd hoped the white dog's interest in us was fleeting. Unfortunately, that was not the case. He wandered around our stall more and more over the coming months. He'd be sitting at our spot when we arrived, or would stretch out in front of us as I performed, taking up the prime spot for paying customers. His presence distracted me. I dropped the ball more often, sometimes felt tired long before sundown. I hadn't invented a new trick in months. Taiho didn't say anything, but his lips would tighten in disapproval as yet another ball rolled away from me to land at the feet of the Meiji dog. Audiences were not impressed. Taiho had taken to dashing past the dog when he blocked our path. Sometimes, Taiho stepped off the sidewalk, causing cyclists to curse at him and, in the case of one white-coated woman, swat him with the back of her hand as she pedaled past. One evening in the seventh month, the mangy dog bounded after us, barking and nipping at Taiho's heels. I turned and sprang off Taiho's shoulder, claws extended. Taiho was my partner, and I refused to let another animal follow us home. The dog far outweighed me, but that mattered little if I sliced open his throat first. My reflexes could be used for more than just tricks. "Go away," I snarled. "Can't you see we want nothing to do with you?" The dog whimpered and drew back. I didn't know if he understood, but my tone left little uncertainty. Taiho looked from me to the dog. "Sunflower," he said, using the name he'd given me. "Let's go." "I can handle him," I said. "Come on, let's go home," Taiho pleaded, almost like he understood this one time. I turned toward him, keeping one eye on the dog. Taiho knelt, both hands stretched forward. I leapt toward him, and he caught me. We walked home, me at the usual place on his shoulder. The white dog did not follow. But that wasn't the last we saw of him. He knelt in front of our stall for most of the next day, leaving only to find food. I dropped the ball a dozen times. Worse, he started appearing in our other haunts, Guichuan Park, Bailo Market. I'd raise my hackles and snarl, but Taihe always pulled me back. "Stay away from him," he'd say. "I don't listen to anything he says." I wasn't sure how I could listen when the dog didn't appear capable of speech. Not that he was unique. None of Li Wen's animals spoke, except that one rooster. Let's find new places to perform, I said to Taihe one evening in our apartment. I was practicing a new trick. I stood on my hind legs, punched the ball into the air with my right paw, tried to punch it again with my left paw, missed, and had to squeeze under the couch to retrieve it. Disappointment flashed across Taihe's face. I looked away. I'd been trying to master this trick for 2 months, and it just wouldn't come off. Sunflower, you can take a break, Taihe said. Mastering new tricks isn't priority. True, getting rid of that dog is. My words fell on uncomprehending ears, but I didn't need Taihe to understand me for him to listen. The next morning, when he opened the door, I strode into the hallway myself instead of climbing onto his shoulders. I hopped down the stairs, fourth floor to ground floor. The moment we reached the street, I broke into a dash. Taihe cursed. Sunflower, where are you? Kept running, trusting him to give chase, and sure enough, his footsteps rang out behind me. Sunflower, we're not going that way. We are now. I knew the city as well as Taihe. Better, I dare say. Many nights I'd unlock the window and slip outside, then sneak back before he woke. I'd scouted likely places, places busy enough to afford us an audience without attracting the attention of enforcement thugs. I led Taihe to one such place, at the intersection between the busy Nanli Road and an unnamed Hutong. I stopped, turned, and stared up at Taihe. He tended to listen more when I stayed silent. He bent down, tried scooping me up. I hopped away. Come on, he said. Stop joking around. I cocked my head. Sunflower, we need to get to work. I performed a leap, flicked my tail. A few passers-by glanced at me. Taihe blinked. You want to perform here? I meowed agreement. Sighing, Taihe began to unfold the mat. In addition to the intersection, I found a place in front of some fine hotels. The tourists loved me. For 2 blissful weeks, I thought we'd shaken off the mangy white dog. Then one day, I spotted him limping down Nanli Road. A woman chased after him with a broom. Get away, you pest, she yelled. The broom missed his back and made a swish-smack sound on the asphalt. The mangy dog bounded in our direction. I dropped the ball, barely noticing my audience's unimpressed sniffs as the dog crouched behind Taihe. The woman, broom still raised, stopped before us and looked from the dog to Taihe, to me. Yours, huh? She said. Keep him away from my stall, you hear me? He's not... Taihe began, but the woman stalked off. I whirled around and snapped at the dog. If you think you can play this off as I just wandered by, you've got another thing coming. The dog barked. I couldn't understand him, but the cadence of his voice, the way he looked at me, it was different from the simple cries of Li Wen's animals. Maybe he did understand me, but... couldn't speak words I understood in return. Was this how Taihe felt during our conversations? I made a raking motion with my claws. The dog backed off to stand near the edge of our small 3-member audience. I hissed, contemplated attacking him. His leg could extend again, but it sported a fresh wound and a continued limp. Sunflower, Taihe's voice, let's get back to performing. I flicked my tail to show disdain. And retrieved the ball, but I couldn't concentrate with that mutt staring at me. I kept making mistakes to the tune of Taihe's disappointed sighs, and by 6 o'clock, I was exhausted. When I stopped, panting, at the center of the mat, Taihe did not encourage me to continue. He folded up the mat, picked me up, and headed home. I was too frustrated with myself to know or care if the dog followed us. That night, Taihe cooked pork bone and cabbage soup. He ate his slopped over rice, while I slurped mine in my bowl, not saying a word. I curled up in my sleeping pallet afterward, and drifted off into nightmares involving broomsticks, chewed up bits of white fur, and balls that scuttled away no matter how I chased them. I woke sometime after midnight to a dark apartment. Sleepless, I padded to the bedroom where Taihe slept, intending to crawl into his covers. I'd done that often years ago, when we first formed this partnership. I'd stopped, when I realized Taihe respected me more when I displayed human-like dignity. But I could afford to indulge this one night. I found his bed empty, though his blankets were unfolded, suggesting he'd fallen asleep and woken up like I did. I padded back to the living room, jumped onto the windowsill, then bit down on the latch and pushed it open. I leapt outside. The summer evening was balmy. Soundlessly, I climbed down. I smelled Taihe beneath the ever-present city smog and followed his scent. I didn't have to go far, just to the back of the building. It was mostly churned dirt and weeds, but along the wall an older man from the first floor had planted a line of roses, using the place as his personal garden since no other residents cared enough to object. I heard the low murmur of Taihe's voice. Hidden in shadow, I peered around the edge of the building and stifled a hiss. The mangy dog lay before Taihe, who crouched and tied off a bandage around the dog's leg. "Last time I'm helping you, okay?" Taihe said. "I can barely make ends meet myself these days, with Sunflower being, well, no longer who she was." I bristled. Taihe stood. The white dog climbed to his feet as well, tail thumping slowly from side to side. "Don't follow me around anymore, okay?" Taihe said. "The deal we made together, it's over. You can't fulfill your side anymore." The mangy dog whined, then barked. "Shh," Taihe said. "You'll wake Sunflower. Get going now." The mangy dog backed away, nose low to the ground. He let out a few of the softest grunts I'd ever heard, then disappeared into the waiting darkness on the opposite side of the building. Taihe remained among the dirt and weeds, staring after the dog for a long time. "What's that about?" I asked Taihe the next morning as he stumbled around his room looking for his left sock. "That business last night with the dog?" Taihe finally located his sock. He proceeded to hop around on one foot while trying to put it on, refusing to sit on the bed for some reason. "How do you know him?" I said. "Why did you help him?" Taihe looked away from his foot to glare at me. "Can't you leave me alone for a moment, Sunflower? I've got enough on my mind without you meowing out." "Ow!" He lost his balance and crashed into the nightstand. Charming. I left him to his own devices. True to his word, if, indeed, that had been what he'd said with those final barks, the mangy dog did not bother us for a while. We returned to our old haunts, but business did not pick up. It was like gravity had grown stronger during the half year since the dog started following us. The ball seemed to fall faster than before, leaving me less time to catch it, less time to do my elaborate turns. A deep ache settled into my muscles when afternoon hit, did not go away until I settled down to sleep. At home, I wrestled the remote from Taihe, nudged the buttons to the sports channel. Introductions to the athletes described them returning from back surgery, from ACL tears, from cancer. It gave me hope that I, too, could make a comeback. Noticing my struggles, Taihe began packing up earlier. Our earnings shrank. He no longer went to the market to buy ribbon fish, instead making meal after meal of cabbage or potatoes. Sometimes, he scooped most of the rice for himself, then scraped bits from the bottom of the pot and served it to me as porridge. The side dish of pickled radishes smelled like dog piss. We could still afford the occasional bag of pork ribs, which Taihe would pick clean before throwing the bones at me. One weekend, Taihe left to visit his parents in the countryside. He didn't take me with him. Despite missing out on better countryside air, I finally felt healthy for those 3 days. I wandered around town at night, lazed around the apartment by day. Maybe I wasn't sick. The strenuous exercise of the tricks seemed to be the only thing that fazed me. Taihe returned. The performances returned. And so did the aches. I pestered him to take me to the doctor in Sunning, but as usual, he couldn't understand. Whenever Taihe got sick, the doctor would hand over a packet wrapped in brown paper. It brewed into a liquid so bitter and foul-smelling that it drove me straight out of the apartment, and Taihe had to waste half our month's supply of sugar to make it palatable. But after downing it, Taihe returned to full health within a day or two. The doctor had helped me, too, once I twisted a leg practicing a new trick. The doctor sprayed the place with a yellow mist, and my leg felt good as new in a day. Sometimes, as Taihe carried me home after another exhausting day, I contemplated going to the doctor myself. But for all his other abilities, the doctor couldn't understand me any more than Taihe did. That was why I needed Taihe. I earned the money. Taihe rented this heated apartment, bought fish at the market, kept me away from people like the old woman who chased the mangy dog with a broom. As the days passed, I half-jokingly complained to Taihe about him not upholding his end of the partnership. But was it any surprise when I grew increasingly unable to perform my own part? The mangy white dog started reappearing around the same time Taihe started disappearing. It was that intersection of Sanming and Tingluo again. By this point, my aches hardly ever went away. They started as a murmur in the morning before blossoming into pain by noon. When Taihe packed up at 6, I'd be shaking and barely able to stand, only too happy for him to pick me up and carry me home. I didn't try to leave earlier. I knew we needed the money. A week ago, I'd tried limping around, pretending my hind leg couldn't reach the ground, in hopes of convincing Taihe to take me to the doctor. Instead, he'd taken me home immediately, and served me rice crusts without even making them into porridge. 3 days of this, and I decide to walk normally again. The performances resumed, and the cabbage and dog piss radish came back. I became more strategic while performing, pausing to rest when passers-by ebbed to a trickle. One afternoon, preoccupied with not dropping the ball, I didn't notice the white dog threading between pant legs to reach us until Taihe's sharp inhale alerted me. Always underweight, the dog was now so thin I could count his every rib. A gash split his left ear, still dripping blood. A strand of Taihe's bandage dangled from his hind leg. Was he so clumsy that he couldn't unwind it, or did he keep it as some kind of memento? "Go away," I said. The ball rolled away, and I left Taihe to retrieve it. The mangy dog glanced at me, something like pity in his eyes. There was a cut under the right one. He turned to Taihe and barked. "Didn't I tell you?" Taihe stopped, looking at me. The dog left. Taihe packed up at 5. After carrying me home, he stormed out the door without telling me where he was going. The days grew colder. The gnarled, sick-looking city trees looked even worse as their sparse leaves turned yellow. The white dog shadowed us. Once a week or so, Taihe would go out after a day's work. He'd come back smelling of cheap cologne and something I couldn't place, something tantalizingly familiar. How strange for a man who'd always been content to spend his evenings watching TV, chatting at me, and making elaborate dinners. But I remembered the window latch, and all those times I'd wandered the city without his knowledge. Taihe had the right to a few secret hobbies. Besides, I could follow him any time I wanted to. The heat turned on. Taihe joked about the misfortune of his sister's family, who lived in the south, where they were never given heat. He made no mention of letting them winter here, so I didn't complain. Huddled together, we watched the snowboarding Grand Prix. I was fascinated by one competitor from a country with a blue and yellow flag. She always went for the highest difficulty, and almost always ended her runs with a wipeout. Maybe I'd missed her better competitions. She was a one-time world bronze medalist. One chilly fifth day evening, Taihe was particularly late to return. I ate burned rice porridge and leftover potatoes that didn't quite sit well with me. I spent the evening suffering from an embarrassing fit of flatulence that made me glad Taihe was away. But near midnight, with my stomach settled, my gratefulness turned to suspicion. Where in the world was my human? Sleepless and bored, I decided I might as well practice. I found the ring in the basket where Taihe kept our performance equipment. But the ball wasn't there. I searched under the couch, through the mess of milk candy on the table, even amongst the cold, dark bottles of soy sauce and vinegar in the kitchen. Nowhere. The front door lock clicked. I stopped, ring around my neck. There was the familiar metal rattle of the outer door, then another key unlocking the inner door. Taihe stepped inside and stopped, when he saw me. Sunflower? You're still awake? I bounded over to him. And you're ridiculously late. Where's the ball? He opened his arms automatically as I leapt toward him. I nuzzled my nose into his chest, and that was when I smelled it. Taiha smelled of dog. Not the mangy white dog, but some unfamiliar dog. He smelled of cat, too. Several cats. Without the disguise of cheap cologne, I identified the scents immediately. Doing okay, Sunflower? Nervous quiver in his voice told me all I needed to know. I followed Taiha the next time he went out. It was barely 7, but winter rendered the sky as dark as midnight. It wasn't snowing yet. My steps made no sound as I tailed Taiha through the streets in Hutong. We arrived at Bailo Market. I kept close to the wall so the vendors wouldn't spot me. They'd recognize me and alert Taiha. Taiha brushed past the grocers, the pendant seller, an old Chen who we hadn't bought fish from for a long time. He stopped before Li Wen, who was stuffing a fish head into a crate containing a yowling cat. Taiha said, "What do you have today, young Li?" At that moment, one of the vendors noticed me. He was new, so he didn't recognize me as Magic Cat. He started yelling at me to get away from his corn, and I made a hasty retreat. But even as I dashed back to the apartment, as I climbed through the window and closed the latch, that image remained behind my eyelids. Taihe, Liwen, the crates with other animals inside. I lived through the next few days in a state of waking dream. My fur bristled when Taihe picked me up, but I was too tired to pull away. Taihe, on the other hand, grew more cheerful as the 12th month rolled past. Lunar New Year fell early this year, and I could look forward to some rest then, as Taihe would return to the countryside to visit his parents. Snow fell hard and fast. At least the cold made me want to move, made the chore performances contain the meager reward of warmth. By this point, I had all the pieces. Part of me knew what was coming, but like those birds who somehow got run over by landbound vehicles, I did nothing. I was a deer in the headlights, expanded into a week, a month. Once again, the Meiji dog stacked me out of bed. A week before the first day of Lunar New Year, I woke an hour past midnight with my heart pounding. In my nightmare, I'd been in a dark room with doors I couldn't open, and no matter how I yelled, no one came. Too agitated to go back to sleep, I dragged myself to the window, opened the latch, and leapt outside. My intent, to wander the city with no destination in mind. But even in the cold first month air, I smelled Taihe. I smelled the mangy dog, too. Their scents were fresh, leading the same way as last time, toward the back of the building. I heard Taihe before I saw him. He wasn't yelling, exactly, but he wasn't whispering either. Like he no longer cared who heard him. "I told you," he snapped. "I won't have anything to do with you anymore. Our partnership is over. I mean, you've respected that for 6 years. Why are you suddenly all clingy?" The mangy dog barked. Then he did a funny little leap. Almost like a weary, clumsy version of one of my tricks. He squinted and gave the scene an imaginary ball. Taiha snorted. "You are way past performing, White Dream. You're of no use to me." The white dog flattened himself on his belly and rested his chin in the snow. "Get up," Taiha said. "You still got 4 legs and a mouth, right? You've got to learn to live on your own. Heavens, I hope Sunflower takes us better than you did." The dog let out a bark that sounded like a cough. I pressed myself against the wall, feeling the bricks scrape against the skin beneath my fur. Taihe crouched so that he and the dog were eye to eye. "Listen," he growled. "In 2 weeks, I'll have a new performer, a cat. You made me realize dogs are too much trouble. I don't want to see so much as a patch of your fur when she comes. I need a fresh start, you know. Sunflowers reach the end of her performing days, no matter how she refuses to accept it. But you've made these last few months even harder for her. The dog took a step back. His head swung back and forth, almost bear-like. Taihe stood. It's not personal. Sunflower is twice the performer you are, and I have to part with her, too. There's a small window for you animals, during which you can perform. No different from human dancers, I suppose. He shrugged. After that, you have to find another way to survive. Taihe turned away. I stood, rooted to the spot, forgetting he was walking in my direction until it was too late. But he didn't glance down as he strode past. His eyes were trained straight ahead, gazing at some faraway goal that only humans could see. The mangy white dog barked, and his barks sounded like wails. He barked long into the night, even after Taihe disappeared into the building. Even after I scampered up the balconies and dove into my pallet before Taihe re-entered our apartment. Curled up, eyes closed in a pretense of sleep, I could still hear the mangy dog's voice. I tried one last time. It was the evening of my last performance, because 2 weeks was fast approaching, and if I didn't decide which would be my last performance, Taihe would decide for me. Though the pain had started before noon, I still performed my most daring tricks. Passers-by stared wide-eyed and tossed us coins, so many coins, more than we'd made in a long time. I waited for Taihe's expression to change, or some intake of breath that said, she can still do this? Something, anything, just a raised brow, with the slightest smile, and it would have changed my mind. But he barely watched anymore. He didn't see me. Even on the rings and the tricks we performed together, he did his part with stone-faced detachment. I could prove nothing to him now, but I could prove it to myself. Though my heart pounded, my breath came quick and shallow, and my paws became slick with sweat, I refused to be anything but my best self that day. At 6, Taihe lifted the mat, dusted snow off the impermeable bottom layer, rolled it up, and slid it into its cover. He lifted me onto his shoulders, his gloved hand rough against the back of my neck. The snow had piled to human ankle height, and it made for slow going. It gave me more time to think, to formulate my words. Is it true? I said. Is what you said to the mangy dog true? Taihe stroked my head. Don't worry, Sunflower. We'll be home soon. Are you going to throw me out, like you did to him? What should we have for dinner tonight? Hey, I bought some ribbon fish last night. My little surprise. I pressed myself closer to Taihe. Every part of me ached from the day's performance. It would have been easy to drift off, dreaming of past days, when I could complete my tricks without pain, while he would cook feasts and pamper me every night. But I couldn't dream forever about something that had ended. I'd become like the miserable old dog. Taihe entered the hutong that served as a shortcut to the apartment. Already it was dark, and snow fell, thick as clumped clouds. Doors were shut against the cold, and curtains drawn for privacy and what little extra insulation. We were the only ones on that narrow path. Please, I said, tell me you understand what I'm saying. Tell me what you're going to do to me. Tell me the truth. This is your last chance. I know it's cold, Taihe said, but we're almost there. I rested my cheek against the exposed skin on his neck. I felt his pulse, like a drum that hammered out the rhythm of our life together. He smelled of steamed rice and simmering bone broth, and home, mine, his, ours. So that is your answer, I said, and drove a claw through his jugular. Afterward, I raced back to the apartment and climbed through the window. I curled up on Taihe's bed, but the scent was too painful, and I moved to my pallet. I fell asleep there, and dreamed dreams I forgot upon waking. I tried to cook the ribbon fish the next morning. The spatula kept slipping from my teeth, and I ended up burning both myself and the fish. I knocked the frying pan to the floor and ate the fish half charcoal, half raw. It didn't taste anything like Taihe's, but ribbon fish was ribbon fish. I wouldn't have this place for long. Humans would soon claim what was Taihe's. I left through the window and made my way to Bailu Market. From morning until noon, I observed vendors. Come afternoon, I tried the wildcat tricks I'd never needed before. I was still quick, still more nimble than any mundane cat could be. I nicked a skewer, lamb, supposedly, but it smelled like rat, and a dough stick without anyone noticing. When I went for the carp, the vendor saw me, tried to swat me with a dripping net. I ran away. None of the vendors recognized me as Magic Cat, though I had performed there for over 3 years. At nightfall, my footsteps took me back to the hotel. I didn't want to go, yet I had to. The falling snow had buried Taihe, except his face, which remained strangely uncovered. Beside him sat a familiar shape, the mangy white dog. "What are you doing here?" I said. The dog barked. "He's dead," I said. "He's not going to give you anything now." The dog growled, then bent to lick fresh snow from Taihe's nose. Preserved and cold, Taihe had barely begun to smell, let alone rot. When the dog looked back at me, his lips were peeled in a snarl. I extended my claws. "That's right. I killed him. Unlike you, I'll never let a human abandon me." The dog took a few menacing steps, then stopped, as if the wind had painted a barrier between us. He crawled back to Taihe's side. His eyes were dual shadows on his thin face, his paws nipped with frostbite. "You need to find shelter," I said. "A garbage dump, a restaurant cellar, or else you'll freeze and starve." I started to walk away, but made the mistake of glancing back, seeing his white-on-white silhouette in the snow. I hesitated, then said, "Follow me. I have some leftovers." I took a few steps, paused, glanced behind me, took another step, looked again. The mangy old dog didn't move. "Follow me," I said, slowly and loudly. I knew he understood me. He had to, but he did not follow. When I came back the next night, I saw two lumps of snow. I walked to the smaller lump, brushing away snow with my paw. I uncovered frozen white fur. I hesitated and licked the snow from the old dog's face as he had done for Taihe. I pressed my cheek against his neck, found him cold and still and devoid of any heartbeat. The other snowy lump I ignored. Somebody, some human, will find him eventually. I stared down at the body of the mangy white dog for a moment. He had fallen on his side, his fur frozen to the earth. Then I turned away. It was cold. I should return to my hideout, eat the food I'd stowed. I was no longer Magic Cat, but I would survive.
Thanks for listening to Asimov's Spotlight, a feature of Asimov's Science Fiction Magazine. If you liked what you've heard, consider subscribing to Asimov's. We're available in print and digital. And please stop by again next month to hear another exciting story chosen from our pages.